So the Dhamma for today is the Samanya Lakkhana, the three universal characteristics. These are the crux of the practice of the Buddha's teaching. And they're like the Holy Grail, that thing which we seek in our practice. Crucial. They're the very core of the Buddha's teaching in regards to what we seek to understand. Seek to see about the world. Samanya means universal, so the importance of these three things is that they are true of everything that arises. Not everything, because you have to exclude Nibbana and you have to exclude concepts. Concepts aren't subject to these three characteristics because they're not real, they don't exist. So you can conceive of something that doesn't fit these three characteristics, but it's not real. Reality fits these three characteristics, and there's no escaping within the framework of arisen things. There's nothing that you could find that would be an exception to the rule, except that which doesn't arise, Nibbana. Lakkhana means that these are characteristics. The three characteristics are anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And these are not presented as theory or philosophy, though you can talk, and I will talk about them. They're presented as characteristics of the experiences that we are faced with every moment. So the presentation is that they are a part of our practice. They are what we're aiming to see about the objects of our experience, which in mindfulness are the objects of our meditation practice. There are things that we don't see. To be clear, it's not an intellectual appreciation about things in the sense that, oh yes, the experiences yesterday are gone, they'll never come back. If you're not enlightened, you don't know these, you've never seen these three things. So a part of that is that they should surprise you. They will be something new, something completely new that you've never encountered before. Because at the moment when you experience them, well, that's the last moment before enlightenment. That's the last moment before the experience of Nibbana, cessation of suffering. These are the three characteristics that relate to why we cling to things. You know, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is that nothing is worth clinging to. It's just, they're just not worth clinging to. And there's three reasons for that, and that's these three things. The reason why we cling is the opposite. We cling because we see things or seek things that are stable. And we suffer because of that. We crave for things, and as a result we suffer because it's not true. It's a mistake. We seek out satisfaction, or we see things as satisfying, and it's a mistake, and so we suffer. We see things and we seek out things that are self, controllable, or me, or mine, or that have some essence to them. And it's again not true. In fact, we don't want to see these things. It's a reason for people to falter in the practice of mindfulness. We spend our lives trying to escape these things, trying to find the exception, or under the mistaken assumption that we have some measure of freedom from these three characteristics, when in fact they're constantly and incessantly presenting themselves to us. We don't see them because of delusion, because of ignorance, because of darkness. They're not hard to see, in fact. It's not that they are not presenting themselves, it's like they're shouting in our ear and we're deaf. The problem is with us. They're right in our face and we're blind. Our minds are so clouded and so confused. There's a real problem. It's like we have a fever, like we're sick. And so we can't tell the difference between hot water, cold water. We can't tell the difference between up and down or light and dark. We can't see that these things are causing us stress and suffering. Most importantly, we can't see that they're not worth clinging to, that they're impermanent, they're unsatisfying, they're uncontrollable. And so when it comes to the practice of meditation, it can be a real surprise and shock, and more importantly, can be a source of discouragement, even for meditators who are aware of these things. It's almost as though, or it almost comes that you can explain about the three characteristics and people will know about them, and they will say, "I'm trying to practice." And I know I'm trying to see the three characteristics, but I'm having trouble. I'm having trouble because it's chaotic. I'm having trouble because I'm just suffering a lot. It's in pain. The pain is keeping me from seeing clearly. And I can't control my mind. I can't keep my mind focused. So you'll see them, you'll see the three characteristics perfectly clearly, but feel like it's a problem with your practice and it's preventing you from doing, well, whatever it is that my teacher has told me to do, because you're still not quite clear on what that is. So it's a real deep fundamental shift in paradigm. It's not something that you'll be familiar with. A big mistake that meditators make is they come in thinking that it's going to be something that they will be able to relate to. And mindfulness, well, vipassana is not something you should ever be able to relate to. It will be something unrelatable, something shocking and new, and something that changes fundamentally your perspective on the world. And it will continue to shock you as you practice again and again. It will be a waking up, feeling like you were asleep just a moment ago, or just the time before you practiced, and you've only now just woken up from a dream. The reasons why we don't see them, there are reasons for each one. The reasons given for why we don't see impermanence is because of continuity. Things seem permanent because they will arise quite similar moment after moment. And based on our focus and our attention, the same experience or an experience of the same type might arise again and again. When in fact the experiences are momentary and can completely change at any moment, they don't always do so. Quite often there will be a continuity of physical experiences and a continuity of mental experience, and it's only by this deep systematic practice of mindfulness that you're able to catch these changes. But the meditators will be caught off guard by the change and will come to see that indeed reality could and does change instantaneously without any warning. The reason why we don't see suffering is because of, well, the word they use is iriyapata, which usually means postures, but it's not just postures, it's the change of conditions. So postures is a good example, the postures of the body. If you're feeling pain sitting down, you'll go and stand up. If you're feeling pain in this position, you'll shift and adjust. But that applies to everything in life, by change. Because the only way we can be satisfied is by striving to find something new, something that will satiate our incessant, our endless hunger. If we were to stay and focus on any one thing, we would be forced to confront the three characteristics, and that would be unpleasant for us. So by constantly shifting, by constantly changing, we're able to avoid the truth of reality. And so no wonder when we sit down and practice meditation, sometimes it can be great suffering, because we're forced to not do that. We're forced to stay focused on the experiences continuously, without change. This is why we do seated meditation, why we'll do walking back and forth, just to keep it monotonous, so that there is no change, so that you can see what happens when you don't change the condition. That's why we'll practice day and night, why we'll try to focus on the same thing again and again and again, like the same type of practice, walking, sitting, walking, sitting. To be able to see what we're hiding, what's hiding from us. And what hides non-self is the appearance of self, the appearance of compactness. Like, things appear to be things. A cup appears to be a cup. A dog appears to be a dog. A human appears to be a human. My hands, my feet, they appear to be things. Things have this sense of compactness, and it has to do a lot with our conceptions. When we see, we conceive in our mind of it as being a thing. And though those are practically useful in the world, they create, or they lend themselves to the delusion that we have of things being a self, having a self, being entities. It's hard, it's difficult, it's really almost impossible without intensive meditation practice to be able to break through this and see that the body is not really a body, it's only experiences. But when you sit and practice meditation, when you reach bhanga-jnana, the mind will begin to see the insubstantiality of things. Your body will feel like it disappears. The truth is, your body was never there in the first place, but the conception of it, this appearance of a self, an entity, of a being that arises in the mind, this disappears. So this is why we don't see them. When we see them, why we want to see them? Wouldn't it be good if we could just avoid them? Well, why we want to see them, of course, is because it's reality, and we set ourselves up for expectations. But when we set ourselves up for expectations that are not met, when we ignore these three things. But more importantly, as I said, seeing these three things is the moment before the attainment of enlightenment. There are three gateways to cessation or to nibbana, and these are based on the three characteristics. So the way it occurs is a meditator will begin to see the three characteristics gradually, until there comes a moment where one of the characteristics presents itself so clearly that it's unavoidable, and the mind fully and fundamentally appreciates this as the truth of reality, that there's no escape, there's no way to avoid this. These are impermanent, reality is impermanent. It's like the last straw where the mind then lets go as a result of seeing one thing. So it could be impermanence. If it's impermanence, it's called animita magga. Animita means no sign or no warning. So we have the idea that we can have our expectations met. We can expect what's going to happen. In meditation, we'll constantly not have our expectations not be met. So we'll be constantly surprised. We'll try to anticipate, because this is the nature of our minds. We try to have some stability, some sort of ability to expect. And the stomach will rise and fall not according to our expectations, and eventually we'll just get sick of it. We'll get fed up, and our mind will let go, and we'll relieve ourselves of this craving and clinging. Through suffering, it's called apanihita magga. Apanihita means desireless or not desirable. So our ordinary state is to find desire or look for desirability in things, look for things that are pleasant or a source of happiness. And so gradually you'll come to see that anything that you might have thought would bring satisfaction is unable to do that. In fact, it just creates stress and suffering, and the incessant nature of experiences again and again, with no ability to run away from them and find something new that could excite you momentarily, is a great source of stress and suffering, great source of punishment. And so eventually the mind has enough. Even just watching the stomach, you'll watch it and you'll just come to the point where, just not through judgment, but just through clear apprehension, the mind will come to let go and turn to freedom. And the third is called sunyata manga, through voidness. This is through non-self. So eventually you'll start to see that the body and the mind, they work on their own. You'll get fed up with trying to control them. And you'll understand that they are insubstantial, they are meaningless, they are pointless, and you will let go. So sometimes the stomach will begin to rise and fall on its own, just by watching, not by judging or thinking, this is not me, this is not mine, nothing like that. Just by watching, you'll see the body and the mind acting of their own accord, and your mind will just let go. So these are the three reasons for seeing these three things, that this is the way, that any other part of the Buddha's teaching has to eventually lead you to seeing one of these three characteristics. This is the only way to realize Nibbana, one of these three paths. The reasons why people see one or the other is given in the text as, if a person has done a lot of good deeds, has been a kind person, a generous person, they will see through impermanence. It has something to do, I guess, with the affiliation or the affinity towards karma, good karma, and the appreciation of good karma versus bad karma. But you'll see that even the good karma that we do is impermanent. The bad karma eventually is going to exhaust itself as well. And so this will lead you to see impermanence. A person who sees suffering is someone generally who has practiced samatha meditation, because samatha meditation is very pleasant and can fixate the mind on the pleasure, the apparent pleasure and the happiness, the apparent satisfaction that comes from experiences. And so it will be enlightening when the meditator begins to practice vipassana and sees suffering. And a person who sees non-self is someone who has practiced vipassana, perhaps in past lives, or someone who has a great affinity towards vipassana practice. So this is some of the general ideas about the three characteristics. As for what the three characteristics themselves mean, what does impermanence mean, what does suffering mean, what does non-self mean? I want to stress again that these are not something theoretical or intellectual. They're something that is glaringly obvious, and we're just missing it. There's a very big and major problem with us, that we're unable to see these things. They should be glaringly obvious. An arahant has no problem seeing these things. They don't see them all the time because they're preoccupied with daily life, but any time they wish to see them, by practicing mindfulness, they see them quite clearly. But nonetheless, there's something very interesting in the texts, that it gives a long list of adjectives that describe the three characteristics that I thought would be interesting to give some clarity on what these three characteristics mean. So there's 15 words to describe impermanence, there's 25 words to describe suffering, and there's 5 words to describe non-self, a total of 40. It's called the 40 means of reflection, or means of understanding the three characteristics. So impermanence, anicca, is the first one is anicca. And this is from the Patisambhida Magga. This is talking about how the mind comes to let go. It comes to let go by seeing sankhara, seeing the khandhas, the 5 aggregates, in 40 ways. And the first way is anicca, impermanent. This is the obvious one, that they're not they don't last forever. And in fact, they're momentary. That reality is just made up of momentary experiences. Number two, paloka. Paloka means they disintegrate. So things are not firm or lasting. Chala, they're fickle. Means you can't depend on them. Fickle like the loka dhammas. Babangu means perishable. Again, they just disappear. Adua, they're unenduring. We have the wrong idea of things that are lasting and reliable. And through the meditation, the point is that this is what you'll see. You'll start to see, perceive them in this way as adua. Viparinama dhamma, of a nature to change. Asaraka, without a core. This one's interesting, like they're like, the commentary says it's like, not like hardwood, but like softwood. It means they can break at any time. Like some of these trees, the branches fall off, they even fall over in a stiff wind. Not like the hardwood. Vibhava, they go to annihilation. Sankhata, they're formed. So things being formed is a part of the nature of impermanence, that they don't exist on their own. There's no thing in reality that exists on its own. They're based on causes and conditions, and they're subject to those the changes of causes and conditions. Marana Dhamma, subject to death. Those are the 10 adjectives to describe impermanence. Something is impermanent because of those 10 things. Dukkha, there's a whole bunch of them. First of all, it's dukkha, it's painful. Roga, a disease. Ganda, a boil. Sala, a dart. So this is the sort of perception for a meditator. It will be quite unpleasant for as long as you cling to things. Now, dukkha is only a problem if you're clinging or while you're clinging. Eventually, you let go and you just have no desire or attraction to trying to attain the good things or fix the bad things. Agga, a calamity. So anytime you get caught up with things, it's a real calamity. An abada, an affliction. Ita, a plague. Upadava, a disaster. Lots of bad things, only bad things come. And this is not theory, or this is not something we're trying to convince anyone of. This is what the meditator experiences. They experience that so much of the things that they cling to or crave after are the opposite of what they thought. They start to see the real danger, the real problem with craving and clinging. Atana, no protection. Alena, no shelter. Asarana, no refuge. These are basically the same. But it means there's nothing that can be your source of stability, your source of happiness. We always look for this. You know, we think if I have a job and a house and a marriage and kids and all these things that everyone raves about, this will be a source of satisfaction for me. This will free me from or protect me from suffering. And it's not true. All these things, of course, tend to be sources of suffering. Agamula, a root of calamity. Not just calamity, but cause for more calamity. Wadaka, murderous. That's serious. Sasava, subject to the asava, the cankers or the defilements. So a big part of why we suffer is because of how the things that we cling to are a source for judgment, for anger and for frustration and for greed and lust and so on. Mara misa, Mara's bait. So they're what Mara uses to trick us. Even just conceptually, they're a reason why we end up doing evil deeds. They bait us into evil. We do a lot of evil deeds trying to get the things that we want and trying to escape the things we don't want, manipulating others, harming others. Jati Dhamma, subject to birth. Jara Dhamma, subject to aging. Biyadi Dhamma, subject to illness. So these are three of the four. You'll notice marana dhamma, there are four qualities of things that they are subject to: birth, old age, sickness, and death. But marana dhamma is under anicca. The other three are under dukkha. Jara dhamma means they arise. So you can't stop the bad things from coming, things that you don't like. The disliking is the problem. There's no world in which disliking is valid, because you can't stop the things you dislike from arising. But the good things as well, jara dhamma, they age, they are ill. Ill means everything gets ill in terms of, like even a rock can get ill in terms of breaking up, or in terms of, you know, trees rotting and that sort of thing. But everything, all of our possessions, even our bodies, our mind, they will rot. Soka dhamma, subject to sorrow. Parideva dhamma, subject to lamentation. Upayasa dhamma, subject to despair. Sorrow, lamentation, and despair, all of these things that come to us in life, they don't come because of things themselves, but they come because of our attachments and our fundamentally our misunderstandings about them. So if we saw things clearly, once we start to see this, then we avoid the suffering. We avoid it by not ever clinging, not ever getting caught up in things that are such a cause for stress and suffering. And finally, sankilesika dhamma, subject to defilement. So again, they're a cause for greed, a cause for anger, a cause for delusion, a cause for great evil. And then the five that relate to non-self, para, other, or alien. One of the big things that a meditator begins to see is that the things that we thought were under our control are not under our control. You'll start to feel your own body and your own mind and like it's another person. Something that's happening to you rather than something you're doing. Rita, empty. Tuchata, vain. Sunyata, void. These three are almost the same word, but they're a little bit different. They're just more adjectives or synonyms almost. But empty is empty of self, empty of substance, empty of any purpose or any meaning, any value. That reality has no, there's nothing in arisen experience that is something that we could put a value on. Happiness doesn't come that way. Satisfaction doesn't come from things. Happiness, satisfaction have to come from freedom, come from you, come from strength of mind and wisdom and independence. Independence means that no matter what you experience, you're at peace, you're free, because you have no longer depend on things to be this way or that way. And number five, anatta, not self. There are four kinds of self. Non-self is the hardest one. Non-self is the problem with non-self is people confuse it with the question of free will or the question of self. And that's not, again, this is not a philosophical discussion. This is a practical description of experience, mostly valuable for helping us to appreciate what we're experiencing, because you will see these things for yourself clearly. You will experience these gradually but inevitably through the practice of mindfulness. There's no avoiding it. The only problem is that we don't want to see it, and we don't expect to see it the way we see it. We don't expect it to be so stressful, so challenging, so unpleasant. And so it can be, a real cause for discouragement. And so talking about the three characteristics is most valuable for that. It's not most valuable to talk about non-self as being a theory or a view. There is no self, or there is no control, or that things are deterministic, or we have free will, or anything like that. These are a description of what you will experience through your practice. And they are the most important and most valuable thing for you to see. But non-self especially is hard because we have strong views about self. The Buddha pinpointed this one out as being a real cause for obstruction of the practice, the belief in self, belief in the soul or belief in control and this kind of thing. We have real strong, even religious beliefs about self and soul that we're we're taught to cling to. So the real lesson is to stop clinging to views. You don't have to have a view that there is no self, that view itself is not the goal. The goal is to let go of views and to be focused on experience. As long as you're thinking even about these three characteristics, thinking about self or non-self or trying to see it, you're not actually going to see it because you're not practicing. The real role of these things is as the result of proper practice. And they will only come if you practice mindfulness. But talking about views of self, there are four views of self. The commentary identifies four kinds of self. If someone says there is a self, what could they possibly mean? Generally, there are four things. The first one is sami-atta. Sami means the master. So the ability to control things. Tell things what to do, tell your body what to do, tell your mind what to do. To be in charge, that there's some self that is in charge. Nivasi-atta means some self that dwells in the body. So someone might postulate the idea of a soul that dwells in the body. Karaka-atta means the self who does. People have the idea that there is the self who is acting. I am walking, I am sitting, I am standing. That is the self that is doing it. And number four, Vedaka-atta. Vedaka-atta is one who feels. So it is the self who experiences. It is the self who sees and hears and smells and does all these things at the same time. So when a meditator starts to say they're seeing and hearing and feeling all at the same time and they don't know which one to know, this is because their wisdom is not yet, or their mindfulness is not yet clear. They're not yet able to see the momentary nature of experience. So they think there is a self that is doing all these things. Likewise, when you walk, you will think the right foot walking and the left foot walking is one thing. The first thing to do is to free ourselves from these views theoretically. Now, the deeper understanding of non-self comes at the end, but a new meditator has to be relieved of these views through mindfulness practice. And until they can do that, they won't be able to attain the higher stages of knowledge. So non-self is very important. But again, our focus is not on these three characteristics. Our focus is on the practice of mindfulness because it leads to seeing these three characteristics. So as you practice mindfulness and your focus is 100% on the practice of mindfulness, you will begin to see impermanence. You will begin to see suffering. You begin to see non-self. And this can be challenging. This can lead a meditator to want to run away. It's described in the manuals as the mini rolling mat stage. So you know that later on there's a stage that people actually do really run away or want to run away because they want to be free. They get to the point where their whole perception of reality is as something to be escaped, and they'll have a strong sense of the desire to be free from suffering. But a new meditator might misinterpret this and think, I should leave, I should run away, and might actually run away. But this earlier on, when one first, very early in the practice, first sees the three characteristics, it can also lead one to want to leave or be discouraged in the practice again, because you see the three characteristics. So most important thing is to understand why we want to see them. That the problem is not in these characteristics. The problem is that we don't see them. The problem is that we cling to things expecting them to be the opposite. There's no problem with reality. If we stopped clinging, it would never hurt us. It would never stress us. It would never cause suffering or discomfort at all. Anytime, even in meditation practice, that it appears unpleasant, this is only a problem with how we perceive things. And if we were to see them as impermanent, unsatisfying, and uncontrollable, we wouldn't get upset. We wouldn't suffer because they would have no power over us. We would be independent of them. So the three characteristics, there's no escape from them. The only escape is to stop expecting things to be otherwise and to not be troubled or surprised when they do, when they do not meet our expectations. So those are the three characteristics. That's the Dhamma for today.